This is episode 109 of Extraordinary Women Radio. Welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio. I am your host, Cami Gilner. Women are being called to lead with voice, vitality, and vigor. Each week, join me for wisdom-filled interviews with extraordinary women living out loud and making a difference in our world. Their stories will uplift, inspire, and spark your own purpose-driven journey. Hello, my extraordinary women friends. It is summer, and I'm about to head out into my sold-out Equine Vision Journey retreat for the next 2 days, some of my very favorite work I do all year long. These retreats are an important part of my VIP clients' journeys to raise up their voices and their visibility. My busy, life-filled clients slow down to the pace of the horses. They create space for their inner wisdom to raise up, to open up to the universal signposts that are showing up in their life. And then they raise up their courage, their bravery, and start taking the big actions and steps that open up all sorts of big opportunities, new ideas, and major breakthroughs. It's truly magical work, and I'm honored to be able to lead this kind of work with my horses, with my good partners in these retreats. My horses just really show up in such beautiful, beautiful ways. And when I look at the list of powerhouse women who will be playing in my arena this weekend with my soulful herd of horses, I get a bit jittery. It's like I have to pinch myself around the impact that's going to flow from this weekend. We've got women in STEM. We've got women raising capital. We've got women leading the C-suite. It's going to be an amazing circle of change makers. And helping them raise up their voice is what lights me up. With a bit more prep to do around here this afternoon, I'm going to keep this short, so let's just dive in. First, I want to thank Sounds True for making the intro to our guest today, Dr. Lissa Rankin. Lissa is a Sounds True author, and I love the women Sounds True is sending to me to interview. I'm so honored. Next week, we'll be joined by Dr. Helen Reese, another Sounds True author who wrote the book on empathy. It's a great interview, and I can't wait to share that one as well. It was such a delight to speak with Lissa. See, I've been reading her book, The Daily Flame, a daily inspirational book, and I have to say, The Daily Flame is one of the best I've ever read. The Daily Flame is all about connecting to our inner pilot light, that sparks of divinity within. It's a wonderful addition to my daily ritual, and I'm really grateful to Lissa for this. Dr. Lissa Rankin is a New York Times bestselling author of not only The Daily Flame, but also Mind Over Medicine, The Fear Cure, and The Anatomy of a Calling. She is a physician, she's a speaker, she's a mystic, and she's the founder of the Whole Health Medicine Institute. Lissa is passionate about what makes people optimally healthy and what predisposes them to illness. She discovered that connecting with our inner pilot light is not only essential to optimal health, to making our body ripe for miracles. It's also the golden ticket to finding and fulfilling your calling, nurturing healthy relationships, and being a loving, responsible, ethical soul tribe member, downloading creative new ideas from the muse and restoring peace on earth. Yes, that's kind of a delicious magic, I'd say. She speaks my language. In 2012, Lissa founded the Whole Health Medicine Institute, where she and a team of luminary faculty like Deepak Chopra, Rachel Naomi Riemann, Bernie Siegel, and many others trained physicians and other healthcare providers about whole health and the 6 steps to healing yourself. Lissa has starred on 2 national public television specials. Her TEDx talks have been viewed over 4 million times, and she leads workshops both online and at retreat centers like Esalen, 1440, Omega, and more. I'm honored to introduce you to Dr. Lissa Rankin. Well, welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio, Lissa. It is such an honor to feature you.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you bet. And you have a great story of leaving your life as a physician and to do the work that you're doing today. And I love stories of transition. I tell a lot of stories of transition here on Extraordinary Women Radio. Can you tell us about your journey?
Well, it's a long story. I wrote a whole book called The Anatomy of a Calling that really answers the question of, like, how did I go from being the least likely person on the planet to end up here? As a conventionally trained doctor raised by a physician father in a family of missionaries where science and spirituality shall never meet. And, you know, in the ivory towers, I went to Duke and Northwestern and places like this, very much an academic upbringing. And anything that might fall into the realm of New Age or mystical or metaphysical was very much diminished as either being quackery mm-hmm. or the works of the devil in the sort of fundamentalist Christian family I was raised in. So I definitely didn't come by this naturally. And, you know, like I said, long story, very short. Essentially, I was called to medicine the way priests are called to the priesthood. It's very much of a spiritual calling. I was 7 years old and unwavering in my devotion to this calling. But the medicine that I found myself practicing was not the medicine of healing. And I found it very, very difficult to know how to operate within a system that, while it gives lip service to patient well-being, really ultimately is at the mercy of the financial bottom line. Mm-hmm. And what that looked like on a practical level was, like, when I started my practice as an OBGYN, I was expected to see 25 patients a day. And by the time I left 8 years later, I was expected to see 40 patients a day, which meant that I had 7.5 minutes. You know, I was double booked in 15-minute slots. And anybody who's ever done healing work can tell you can't do healing work in 7.5 minutes. You can barely even do a pap smear or a prenatal exam in 7.5 minutes, much less doing healing work. And I started suffering from, you know, what looked like suicidal depression, but which Harvard doctors are now calling moral injury, which is a term first described. There is. It was very helpful for me to be to have it labeled. And it's a term that was used for return war veterans who were following orders and doing their job, but were going against what they knew was right. And so every day was an experience of more and more kind of moral injury. And it culminated in a night where I was ready to just end it all on the floor of the bathroom. And I was 24 weeks pregnant with my daughter, which was my biggest conflict because I didn't feel like I had any business making the decision to end her life. And I heard a little voice that said, "Sweetheart, you're going to have to quit your job."
Oh, wow.
And I'm not used to hearing little voices. So I was like, "Who's that?" It was kind of terrifying. And the message was terrifying too. Wait, I can't quit my job. I'm a full-time provider. My husband doesn't work. I have a baby on the way. I have a mortgage to pay. I've spent 12 years going to school. I still have medical school debt, yada, 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 right? Mm-hmm. And the voice was so loving and so gentle. It said, "You don't have to do anything now. You just have to make peace with what's true."
Wow.
And I could feel this relief because it sounds true. Right? It was like, this is true. I am killing myself.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to kill myself.
You felt the truth in it, right?
Yeah, and I was already taking 7 medications for a whole host of cardiac problems and other chronic medical conditions that my doctors said I would have to take for the rest of my life. Like, my body literally wasn't tolerating my life. And on top of that, my psyche wasn't tolerating my life. So, you know, ultimately, the story of, it took me 2 years from that moment to actually leave. And the story of what led to that crisis point is longer than we have time for, but it is in The Anatomy of a Calling. Ultimately, it didn't feel like a choice. It felt like, yeah, I was protecting my soul. I was protecting my integrity. And so I didn't have any idea what to do next. I spent 2 years in the space between stories when one story has ended and the other story has not yet begun. And healing and grieving. I lost my father 2 weeks after my daughter was born by C-section. My father died of a brain tumor. My 16-year-old dog died. My healthy young brother wound up in full-blown liver failure as a side effect of an antibiotic he was taking for a sinus infection. And then my daughter's father, who was going to be her primary caregiver, cut 2 fingers off his hand with a table saw and had to have microsurgery. So it was like all that happened all
at once.
So just the perfect storm.
And was it at that point that you said, "Okay, I'm doing this. I'm making the leap."
It was October. I was 24 weeks pregnant with my daughter when I heard the voice. You know, she was born at 36 weeks. So she was born, you know, 12 weeks later.
Okay.
And my dad died 2 weeks after that. So it was still almost a full 2 years before I left.
Oh, wow.
And it was
what was the catalyst?
It was agonizing.
What was the
Well, that's why I said the whole story. You don't want me to tell the whole story. It's not a short story.
Where's the
like
courage,
I said,
though?
It was a soul decision.
Yeah, it was a soul decision.
Long story short, I decided not to follow orders and perform a premature C-section on twins that had not had lung maturity tested. And basically I was told, you either do what you're told or you leave. So I was not going to put two premature babies unnecessarily in the ICU. Okay. That was the ultimate catalyst.
Okay.
But there were 100 things before
exactly.
then. It was just so, I couldn't imagine life outside of the hospital. I couldn't begin to see life where I am now. And it's probably a good thing, because if I knew then where I'd end up now, I would have been terrified. I'm super introverted. I have no interest in being in the limelight. And I've given 4 TED Talks and 2 PBS specials and written 7 best-selling books. And so I never would have signed up for this much public life.
Right.
But I've just been following kind of one breadcrumb after another since that little voice started talking to me. And I've developed a very intimate relationship with what I now call my inner pilot light. And I started as a daily practice. I thought, gosh, there's some part of me that knows what's good for me better than my mind. And my mind is terrified of doing these things. But, you know, I like to joke that in the beginning I had blind faith and now I have evidence-based faith. And I have the kind of mind that likes evidence. So, you know, I started discovering that if I did what that little voice told me to do, things tended to go very well. And if I didn't, then I tended to really regret it. And so I started kind of tracking that. And I hit a point, I don't know, probably 6 or 7 years ago, where I realized that that was my ultimate desire. Like, my primary desire was to live in alignment with whatever that voice was telling me to do, even though it often went against what the culture would say was wise. It went against my rational mind. It went sometimes against my conscious desires. And so I made a deep commitment to be obedient to this guidance that comes in lots of forms. It's not just a voice. Sometimes it comes in dreams. Sometimes it comes through synchronicity. I have sometimes, like, I swear Pandora speaks to me all the time. Like, I'm obsessed
song,
with
right?
music. Yeah, I'm obsessed with music. I read Rolling Stone cover to cover. Like, I'm a musician myself. And so often, like, the most profound guidance will come through music.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And in my book, I call it the signposts that come to it in my book, Fire Down.
Totally.
And it's so magical.
Totally. I mean, literally... Sometimes it's literally some person on the street stops you and says, I have a message for you from your guides. Like, it's trippy.
That's totally awesome. You call it your inner pilot light.
Yeah. I mean, every esoteric tradition of every religion has a different name for it. You could call it Christ consciousness or Buddha nature, the soul or the center of your love, or, you know, they all have a different word for it. To me, it's the... If you use theological terms, it is the immanent divine, the God within, the goddess within, or in the Hindu tradition, you would say the divine feminine, like the divine incarnate, like, yeah, which is connected to the transcendent God or the sacred masculine or the all that is. And I think of it as a kind of portal. It's like a portal to everything that's knowable, which means that it's related to this kind of organizing intelligence that is like the grand symphonic orchestra conductor that can see the big picture far bigger than my small mind. So I kind of think of it like I have my small local mind, but this is the aspect of my being that connects me to what you might call non-local mind or the collective consciousness or the gnosis field. And so if we can get the small mind to sort of relax and trust and get out of the way, and let the one mind guide my personal actions, then any number of things that look like miracles are possible. And I have, like I said, I have hundreds of stories like that, which is why I joke that I have evidence-based faith now.
Right, because it's always there for you. And from this, so you started a series of emails called The Daily Flame, which was letting these stories come forth, the wisdom come forth.
Well, it was interesting because in the beginning when this aspect of my being started communicating with me, I made it a daily practice to just sit down. I've been a writer my whole life, so writing comes really easily for me, and I can do it sort of bypassing the conscious mind. Mm-hmm. So I would just sit down at my computer, and something would come through my fingers. And I was sharing my daily practice with some of my friends, and they kept saying universally, like, wow, how is it that your inner pilot light knows exactly what I needed to hear today? And I thought of it as so personal, because sometimes it was very specific, but I realized that a lot of what was coming through might be sort of transpersonal, you know, kind of in the realm of some sort of universal wisdom. And so I started publishing it as a daily email. And for many years, I think lots of people still don't even know I'm actually the author of that. So I feel a little shy putting out this latest book, The Daily Flame, because it has my name on it. And it's, you know, it was just kind of
it flowed through you.
A transmission.
Right.
I'm sorry?
Right. I get that. I have a deck of inspirational cards, and I can go back and look at those. And the way those came for me was in a morning writing every day where I had the actual artwork.
Yeah.
And I would sit down and I'd look at the piece and I'd let whatever come through, you know, what I would just write it. And I can go back to those now and read those and go, wow, I wrote that. You know,
so I know.
It's kind of that.
I feel that way too.
Yeah, it's that. It's like it came through me. So I totally appreciate that. What I will say to you is, I love your book, The Daily Flame, 365 Love Letters from Your Inner Pilot Light. I have incorporating that into my daily practice now. It's part of my morning ritual. And if the right messages come to me on, you know, the right days, and it's magical work. And I think it's such important work for us to be able to really recognize that we've got this inner pilot light really on our side with us every single day. And that's what I love about it. It's I'm here for you. Just pay attention, listen to me. Tune in. And I think it's such a beautiful message.
Thank you. Well, it's very comforting. You know, and it also can be, I kind of think of it as like the perfect mother none of us ever had. None of us had perfect mothers, and none of us are perfect mothers. Mm-hmm. But it's like the perfect sort of nurturing, maternal, kind of comforting, loving, unconditionally accepting presence. But it's also can be kind of the tough love, the fierce love, the, you know, it's also the part of me that calls me on stuff. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, without shaming, without shooting, it's right. Just like the scalpel of truth. And it feels true. And so, you know, I've kind of come to think of that as sort of my definition of love, is kind of that razor's edge between sanctuary and refuge on one side, and sort of the crucible of growth and transformation on the other, and walking that fine line. Because if we're just in the fire, it's too painful and masochistic. And if we're just kind of looking for comfort, seeking refuge, then we don't lean in when it's time to grow.
Right.
So
right.
That's kind of how I feel about that loving presence in me, is it's walking that fine line and always seems to know right where I am, exactly what I need.
And, you know, for me, it's when I think about just our times in our world right now, it feels to me like this is really important messages for us to tune in and to listen to that inner wisdom in the midst of all the noise and craziness that is around us on a daily basis.
Absolutely. And this is really the fundamental of peacemaking, right? Because the inner pilot light in me is connected to the inner pilot light in you and to everybody. And it's the portal that connects us to the one. And so if we can actually become more intimate with that aspect of our being and attune our frequency to be able to pick up that aspect of another person's being, it's very hard to go into the sort of polarizing, othering, demonizing, hating of, you know, I'm on the side of good and you're on the side of bad, and so I'm going to call you the enemy and I'm going to go to war with the enemy. And that war consciousness, whether it's the war on, you know, a country, or the war on terror, or the war on drugs, or the war on cancer, or in the case of self-help, the war on the self, you know, the only winner in war is war. So to me, this is like the, I don't know, it kind of like dissolves that war consciousness.
Right, and brings and wraps love around it instead.
Absolutely. It expands to contain all of it. It's like when I am in, when I am in the frequency of my inner pilot light, I can host all of these points of view, multiple points of view, not just like a paradox that seems contradictory, but is two things that are both true, but potentially infinite points of view as being infinitely valid and relevant without having to be righteous and stand on the side of right and hate everything that is wrong. But only your inner pilot light can do that, because the mind cannot. The mind is made to judge and polarize. I mean, that's what minds do.
Right.
And mine does it too. But my inner pilot light can host even that part of myself. It can host my judgment or my righteousness or my, you know, indignation or my anger, my outrage at what's going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
But it also can host my compassion, my ability to ask other people, what's it like to be you?
Right.
What's it like to be you? Gosh, I don't know. If I had been raised the way you were raised, I'd probably be doing the same thing that you're doing. But I wasn't. I had different kind of wounding. So it's really hard to understand why people are behaving the way that they are. But, I mean, I'm working on my latest book now called Sacred Medicine. And at the foundation of a lot of these healing practices I've been studying with shamans in Peru and Qigong masters in China and energy healers in the U.S. and trauma therapists here, it seems to all come back to trauma. Like, we are extremely traumatized creatures these days. And when we blend with our trauma, rather than aligning with our inner pilot light, then we just create havoc. So it's a hard time to be in a human body right now.
It is. It is. And I know, you know, you were definitely called to move from the work that you were doing as a physician. And now it's like you're in this whole different space of healing. So when you talk about healing our healthcare, healing ourselves, healing with sacred medicine, what does that mean to you? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, I'm still working that out. I mean, I'm 10 years really into researching what I originally called whole health. And my book, Mind Over Medicine, introduces a wellness model that I call the Whole Health Cairn. And I also talked about it in two of my TEDx talks. And it's the foundation of the work that I teach to doctors and other healthcare providers in the institute I created, the Whole Health Medicine Institute, which, again, is a whole other book and a whole other conversation about what is whole health.
Right.
But for me, there's multiple facets to it. First of all, when I talk about whole health, I'm including everything that other people would talk about regarding healthy behaviors. I mean, whether it's diet or exercise or supplements or functional medicine or whatever, but that is 1/10 of the wellness model. And the other aspects, the foundation stone of this model is your inner pilot light. It's basically, you know what's good for your body better than anybody else. And you can call upon experts, and doctors and other people like that can be experts that you go to for a consultation. They can help educate you about your options. But ultimately, when it comes to you, you are a unique individual with a unique signature. And your whole system, when I say your whole system, your body, your energy body, your etheric body, your mental body, your emotional body, your astral body, whatever you want to talk about, all of these different frames that people have for different energy systems, that your inner pilot light is the part that knows what's uniquely right for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so the inner pilot light is sort of the foundation of this model, and the physical health is the top. But in between, we have, you know, are you living in alignment with your inner pilot light in your relationships, in your work and life purpose? Are you fulfilling your calling? Are you expressing yourself creatively? Are you feeling fulfilled sexually? Are you living in an environment that is healing for you? Are you experiencing financial health? Are you healthy in your mental life? All of these things that are scientifically proven, and all of the evidence is in Mind Over Medicine, if anybody thinks those things don't affect the physical body. But all of those aspects of our life affect our health, and they're all interconnected. So if one of them becomes out of balance, it can affect all of the others. So that's kind of the foundation of what I'm calling whole health. And, mm-hmm. and sacred medicine for me is something that's a sort of, I don't know, like an overriding umbrella over that, which incorporates all of the different ways that the flow of life force through our systems gets impeded for a variety of different reasons. It could be environmental traumas because you lived like next to a toxic waste dump. More likely it's, you know, developmental traumas or these adverse childhood events, the ACEs that researchers are studying with the link between trauma in childhood and adult onset disease. It's potentially things like past life traumas or even generational traumas that got passed down through your DNA, through your ancestors that didn't even happen to you in this life. And all of these different ways that the system can get blocked can interfere with the free flow of movement from the earth, from earth energy kind of moving through you, connecting to the cosmos and moving through all of these different energy bodies to take what is needed to the cells, to the tissues, to the organs. Like the physical body is connected to all of that.
Right.
And it's
right.
To me, it's all God, right? Like it all has consciousness and mm-hmm. it's all interconnected in this kind of living matrix. And we can work with that matrix with our love, with our intention, with other people that have developed the ability to entrain our frequencies into the frequency that they may be connected to, which many people think is Schumann's resonance. It's the frequency of Earth. Mm. That Earth may actually be one of our best healers.
So by tuning in or being connected, more connected to the Earth, that it's shifting how we resonate. It's shifting the energy of us.
Yes. And some people have developed the ability to do that just through kind of a sort of meditation practices where they are channeling that energy and they're entraining other people almost like pendulums in a room will mm-hmm. all start swinging together.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the people that I've been studying for the past 7 years is these people that seem to have this uncanny ability to hold a frequency that can, kind of pull other people's out of balance frequencies into the frequency of healing, into a sort of natural attunement.
Oh, that's really interesting.
The body is made to heal. Like healing just happens. It is a natural phenomenon. So the question really becomes, why does healing stop? And in Mind Over Medicine, I was sort of promoting the idea that which is a well-known idea, I didn't make it up, about psychoneuroimmunology, that basically the body is fully equipped with natural self-healing mechanisms, but they only function when the nervous system is in the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the relaxation response, the homeostatic mm-hmm. response.
Mm-hmm.
But we in modern culture are in fight or flight sympathetic nervous system at least 50 times per day, and every time wow. we're in the stress response, the self-healing mechanisms are turned off. So that's kind of the more elementary explanation.
And that's what is turning off the healing is that 50 times a day of stress that hits our body.
Well, that's one of them. I now think it's far more complicated than that. Like I said, I'm 7 years past. I wrote Mind Over Medicine in 2011. So I've learned so much more. And that is all still true. But I think it's far more complicated than that. And I'm literally getting brain aches trying to write this latest book to try to explain physics. Like,
right.
This is physics we're talking about.
Right. That's fascinating to me.
And you know, spirituality.
And one thing that really strikes me, and it's, you know, this is me going simple on this because I know it's much more complicated than this, but the connection to Earth. So when I think about nature and what nature makes me feel like when some of the work that I do with my horses, when I do equine guided retreats and that kind of work is like so connecting people into this deep connection to the earth. Right.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you're talking about shamanic journeys and you're talking about, you know, different types of practices that happen around our world that are so ancient that heal people for, you know, so many years, you know, thousands upon, you know, many, many years. And so it makes me curious. It's almost coming full circle back to those ancient healings.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the first chapters in my new book, Sacred Medicine, which won't be out for a couple of years now, is about the time that I spent with the indigenous healers in the Caros in Peru and with a Kogi Mama from Colombia and some Native American healers and such. And one of the practices that I came back from the Caros with is a practice that they call despacho.
Okay.
And despacho is a community ritual. The whole tribe gets together and spends several hours doing this elaborate mandala as a gratitude practice for Pachamama, for Mother Earth, for as a way to practice their primary spiritual law, which is sacred reciprocity, that we can't take more from the earth than we give back. And so despacho is part of how we kind of pay our debt to Mother Earth for oxygen, for food, for water, for shelter, for all of the gifts that we take from Mother Earth. And as I was studying the physics of all of this, especially all of the research around Schumann resonance and the alpha brain waves, I'm getting nerdy here, but when your brain is in alpha state, that is in the same range of frequency as Schumann resonance. And when we go into ritual space, when we're going into liminal space, we're often going into alpha brain waves. So how brilliant that, first of all, the Caros knew to get us on the ground. You sit on the ground when you're doing this. Your intention is upon healing and offering blessings to the earth. You're in ritual space, so you're activating alpha brain waves. You're literally using the earth as a healer, as prevention. And the Kogi say, when you get sick, the first thing they say is, well, this, and they're very kind of blunt about this. They don't mince words. They're not soft about it. They pretty much say, if you're sick, it's because you're out of sacred reciprocity. And the first thing that they tell you to do is go do offerings to the earth. Go make it up. You messed up. Go make it up and do offerings to the earth. So again, maybe the rationale for it is, I'm not going to dispute whether that's right or wrong, but the medicine they're literally prescribing is go do offerings to the earth. How awesome is that?
That is beautiful. That's totally beautiful. And it's, you know, what happens is then it's that shift that happened, that energetic shift that starts to happen that opens us up to different, you know, whatever needs to be coming to us.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
I mean, I live 20 minutes from the closest gas station or grocery store where the redwoods and the mountains meet the ocean. And I spend at least 3 hours outside every day on the land. It's part of, I don't think I'd be able to write The Daily Flame if I wasn't doing that, going out and making offerings and being in that heart space where I'm in love with the fox that lives in my backyard and the coyote that lives in my front yard and the three deer that live here and Felix the skunk. And I'm in love with all the wildfires, flowers, and I know what's going to bloom when and what's going to die when. And it's like watching, being part of these natural cycles, not just the moon cycles that many sort of goddess cultures will celebrate, but just all of these, the cycles of the plants that are growing, which edible plants are available right now. My daughter knows them all. But we've lost so much touch with that. But I think that, to me, is part of the sacred medicine.
Yeah, you know, I live in the foothills of Colorado, so I have that around me as well. And I name the deer who are in my yard. I have Grammy. She's, you know, and I totally, so I can resonate with what you're saying here. And I think that it is part of when we find ourselves in that space. And then, you know, so the foothills of Colorado, but I also am very drawn to the Oregon coast. And I get on the coast of Oregon and I feel like a whole different energy that surges through me. So I think there's, you know, there's different energies that come from different parts of the world and different places in the world.
Absolutely.
And when we can tune into what our body needs, I can tell you, I get to places where it's like, I really need ocean energy in my body.
Yeah.
And I have to go there. And then sometimes my creativity really flows from there. So it's really fascinating to me how to tune into that.
Well, and I think it helps to tune us into the consciousness and aliveness of all things. I mean, we can, you know, one of the practices my husband, who doesn't have as much experience with kind of listening to an inner pilot light in himself, sat me down one day. He's a sound engineer, and said, would you just record, like, what exactly do you do if you want to get guidance from your inner pilot light? Mm-hmm. How do you do it? Mm-hmm. And so we recorded a whole program called Connect to Your Inner Pilot Light. That's like, I don't know, like 30 practices.
Oh, cool.
And we put it on a sliding scale. So it's as cheap as $5 for people that can't afford it at innerpilotlight.com.
Okay.
But one of the practices is about just like using nature as an oracle. Like you can go out and be with the ocean or a tree or a flower and sit down and say, what does the universe want me to know, right? What does this waterfall have to communicate with me through that portal? And that can be a really beautiful practice.
Yeah. You know, there's, so you talk about the goddess journey. One of my friends from Virginia came for dinner just a few weeks ago, and she saw your book, The Daily Flame, sitting on my living room table. And she said, oh my God, I went to one of your retreats. And she said that, you talked about the goddess journey there. And so she actually did a goddess journey concept with her husband when they were taking a weekend away, and they turned into this very magical, amazing weekend for them. So it'd be fun if you would share with our audience today what a goddess journey is, because I think this could be something they could go do to really tap into that inner guide, right?
Yeah. Well, that's one of the practices in the Connect to Your Inner Pilot Light program too. And I talk about it in the Daily Flame book as well. I call it a goddess quest. And for me, it's a way to practice trusting your inner pilot light in a way that won't harm you, right? You're not making a decision about whether or not to leave your marriage or quit your job or whatever. You're trying something harmless. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, you can do it for an afternoon or you can do it for 2 weeks. My daughter and I did a 2-week goddess quest at one point.
That's awesome.
We had an amazing time. We basically decided, okay, here's the parameters. So you kind of have to decide how you're going to decide to start. And then what are the parameters? So our parameters were, we're going to drive our goddess quest. So we're only going to go where we can get to in a car. And we're not going to pay anything other than gas. So we're going to open it up to the universe to show us where we're supposed to be. And so I posted on Facebook, my daughter and I are going on a goddess quest. We live in the Bay Area in California. We don't know where to start. Anybody have any ideas? And we got like 100 invitations. Come and use my family's vacation house on the river here. Like, and we, so I asked my daughter, I said, okay, Sienna, how are we going to decide? Because it's not like you read the options and decide what do you want. That would be not a goddess quest.
Right.
So she said, well, I'm going to make a map. So she drew a map of Oregon. I think we had like Oregon, California, Arizona, and Nevada. Mm-hmm. So she drew this whole map, and then she put little pins on all the places where we had invitations. And then she said, okay, now Mom, you're going to close your eyes and you're just going to put your finger down somewhere. And so I did, and I put it right on one place. And she said, I said, is that where we're going? And she said, no, now I'm going to close my eyes and put my finger down somewhere. And you're going to spin the map just like she had done for me. And she put her finger down in the same place.
Oh my gosh.
So that's where we started. And every day I taught her a different tool.
Oh my
gosh. So one day we did dream seeding. I said, okay, before we go to sleep, I'm going to teach you how to ask your dream to give you a clue about where we're supposed to go tomorrow. Mm. And then the next day I taught her muscle testing so that she could learn how to check in with her body and ask her body what we're supposed to do today. And then the next day I taught her, you know, how to use an oracle deck to try to make a decision. And so we played. It's playful. It's very playful.
Oh, so awesome. How old was she then?
She was about 10, I think.
Nice.
She's 13 now.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I so love that. I so love that.
And kids love it. Kids love Goddess Quest. So what that means is you have no plans. You have no reservations. This means worst case scenario, you might wind up on the side of the road sleeping in your car, right? Mm-hmm. Because who knows? But we never did. And we had one magical thing after another. And the last day of the Goddess Quest, I had been teaching Sienna all these tools, but I didn't have an extra tool. I said, today you're just going to pick your own tool and make, because she was in charge of the Goddess Quest. And so she said, Mom, we're going to Spring Creek. I said, where's that? She said, I have no idea. It just dropped right in.
So I looked up Spring Creek.
Yep. I looked up Spring Creek, and there was a Spring Creek, like, state park thing 30 minutes away. So I said, do you know why we're going to Spring Creek? And she said, Mommy, the water is sick. We have to go do despacho.
Oh, my gosh.
So we went to Spring Creek, and we did despacho, and it was quite, the water was obviously quite sick.
Wow.
So, but that's what I mean. It's kind of training wheels for the intuition. It's kind of, and it's playful, so there's no way to do it wrong.
That's awesome.
So I run a mentoring program. It's the limited one-on-one work that I do anymore for just like 10 people a year. And so some of the people that come to spend all day with me will be like, okay, take me on the Goddess Quest. I want to learn how to actually do this. But it's not hard. Anybody can do it.
That's cool. And that's in your tool set that you've developed.
Yes. I've even written a blog about it. You can find the blog for free if you just Google search Goddess Quest and look at Rankin.
Awesome.
Yeah, but it's also in my book and it's in the program in more detail.
Okay. Well, this is awesome. And I could talk to you all day, but I know you actually have some place to go to be with your daughter. So
I do. My daughter is Puck in A Midsummer Night's Dream tonight in play at her Waldorf school.
Yeah, that's so exciting. So the final question I always ask is, what three pearls of wisdom can you share with us today?
Well, the one that I always like to close with is just that, you know, changing your operating system to letting your inner pilot light take the lead is a radical, subversive act. It's a revolutionary act. It goes against everything the culture tells you, which is trust your mind, trust your intellect, you know, trust the rational process. Trust the masculine principle, right? Don't trust the feminine, the intuitive, the inner knowing. And so one of the ways that it can be helpful to make that shift is through a practice of surrender, right? Where we're kind of surrendering the small mind to the bigger mind. And so we're getting the mind to ally, not demonizing it or making it something that we're going to ignore, but just asking it to sort of help us surrender to this greater will. And that's one of the things that's in almost all of my books, is this sort of fundamental, like the gateway to magic is spiritual surrender, right? Mm-hmm. And so the Goddess Quest is a fun way to practice that, because you're entering into the unknown and you're surrendered to the not knowing without trying to control it. So there's lots of resources. Yeah, there's the Connect to Your Inner Pilot Light program has an extended version of what I like to call the God Box meditation that I learned from Tosha Silver, that is sort of the how. How do you surrender? There's an actual how. So that, I think, is one of the most important. And then I guess, you know, having the trust to begin to experiment with that takes courage. Mm-hmm. And we can't really bully ourselves into it. So I was talking before about being able to host all of these different emotions or different points of view. So this inner pilot light is the aspect of your being that can host all of that. So if you're scared to trust, if you have a doubting part or a frightened part or a controlling part or a manipulative part or whatever, love bomb them. Like, I'm so tired of spiritual teachers saying that we need to cut out the ego, transcend the ego, get over the ego, whatever. The ego is you.
Right.
This is more of you to love, not something to cut away. And the inner pilot light is what can love all of those parts, including, you know, your addict part, your rage part, your potentially your sociopath part, right? Suicide part. I got to know my suicide part.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That part just needed more love bombing.
Right. I like that.
So that's one of my triggers, is when I hear people talking about how we need to, like, you know,
control our ego, shut it down.
Yeah. Bully it.
It
doesn't work. It's just the opposite.
Love it instead.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, okay. I guess that's two. Okay, one more. Well, I guess the last thing I'll say is a kind of paradox, which is that you can heal yourself and you can't do it alone. And I, you know, I think the self-help movement, of which I'm a part of, so I'm speaking from within it, has done a lot of damage in suggesting, sort of reinforcing the rugged individualist of American sort of culture. And yes, it's true that the body can heal itself. Your body has everything it needs to fight cancer, to cure disease, to repair wounds. I got attacked by a pit bull last year and had a 6-inch hole in my inner thigh that surgeons told me would never close without skin grafting. It closed on its own. My body knew how to fix my wound. But I definitely could not have done that alone. I didn't need surgeons to put skin grafts on it, but I needed a whole lot of people to support the trauma healing, to make sure I didn't get PTSD from being prey, the spiritual healing, to look at what might have been happening in my consciousness at the time to make me vulnerable, to not seeing the danger was in my midst. Like all of the people that I counted on to help me change my bandages and help me take care of myself and help me, like, we need each other.
You collectively healed yourself, and it was, it was not you just saying, okay, I'm going to will myself to healing. It was actually putting the collective healing powers.
No, I don't think willpower is enough. And I get, again, I get triggered by people who suggest that you can heal yourself. And if you're not cured, it's because you're not using your willpower enough and manifesting enough and, you know, practicing the law of attraction enough and putting your intentions and saying your affirmations or whatever. That's not enough.
Yeah. No, thank you for that. I really appreciate that.
And so it ends up sounding like blaming somebody who's suffering. And what I can say is that healing is a group effort. And I don't know why the universe is the way it is or why things go the way they go. But I think sometimes that the suffering that we go through, whether it's illness or trauma or loss, grief, but sometimes those journeys of the soul, this is soul work.
Right.
And it's often only when we're suffering that much that we're willing to let go of thinking that we can be in control of our lives and that we don't need anybody else. So it's often the place where people learn to receive for the first time, where they learn to be needy, and they learn that it's beautiful to be vulnerable and to let other people help support you. So I just wanted to say that if anybody who's listening is wrestling with illness or injury or trauma, I created something called the Healing Soul Tribe that's part of a much bigger vision that I have that has not fully come into fruition, where it's an online community of people who are healing from illness, injury, or trauma.
What is it called again?
It's called the Healing Soul Tribe. You can find it on my website at lissarankin.com.
Okay. We'll make sure we include
a month.
That.
Yeah, we have 3 calls a month. And part of what we're doing is we're teaching people how to become group leaders to create healing soul tribes in their own communities. My bigger vision is to have this be something as ubiquitous as 12-step is for people in recovery or people who are in relationship with people with addictions.
Right.
There's nothing like that for sick people. There's support groups, you know, there's like a breast cancer support group or whatever, but it's diagnosed specific. And there's no system in place for people that have been on a healing journey who have recovered to be able to support those that are still healing and to have that be part of their recovery, just the way people in AA, for example, when they get clean and sober, they participate in AA to be an inspiration to the people that are, you know, still struggling.
Right.
So that's part of my bigger vision, but it's still sort of in its pilot stages. We're a year and a half into our experiment. So anybody who's listening who just wants to go deeper, we're delving into all of the topics of whole health, working through the whole health care and together there.
That's awesome. Well, Lissa, this has been such an honor and such a pleasure, and
thank you.
I really enjoyed all of your wisdom that you shared with us today. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me. Thanks to everybody who's been listening.
Well, you have a wonderful day.
You too.
I hope you liked this episode of Extraordinary Women Radio. If you did, please share this podcast with your own special tribe of women and help spread the love, the dreams, and the inspiration. Are you ready to raise up your voice, your visibility, and your business? I invite you to visit me at CammieGellner.com to find out how you can make heartfelt connections to mindful strategies to ignite an abundant flow of cash and clients into your business. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media channels. I'm on both Facebook and Twitter. Till next time, my friend, listen to your heart, follow your dreams, and be you.